Hey guys, welcome to episode number 10 of Let's Book Talk. Today we're speaking with Gabby Skeldon, the author of Found, and this was such a fun conversation, and I have to say thank you to Gabby for allowing me to relive a childhood memory that I haven't thought about in so many years. But we had such a great conversation talking about Found, talking about, you know, what it's like writing, you know, different versions of these Arthurian legends, and the how, like, crucial it is to kind of follow some story beats to keep, you know, things feeling familiar, but also what it's like deviating from the established lore sometimes. So I thought that was really, really interesting to talk about. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoy the episode. All right. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on. So I always like to start off these shows by asking where that passion for storytelling started and how all of that developed. So if you could start there, that'd be great.
Yeah, of course. So I don't remember not having a passion for storytelling. I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't. Mm-hmm. I can always remember wanting to write stuff and like making up my own little stories or fan fictions. I did a little bit when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I think everyone who's a writer, whether they admit it or not, has definitely dabbled in some fan fiction.
Right.
But yeah, I've always just loved different stories and like hearing different stories, like whether they're from books or like made up or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I just always enjoyed it.
Awesome. And you know, I was reading a bit about yourself on your website. And, you know, growing up in Yorkshire and being a part of just that environment, how do you think that that also impacted that, you know, drive for storytelling as well?
I think like the being in such like a beautiful part of England,
yeah.
Like the countryside is really nice and really inspiring. Like I try in my work to like give a nod to all the different places that I enjoyed growing up, or to kind of be as true to places that I'm mentioning that are actually real in my story, because I think, you know, the English countryside is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I was privileged to be able to grow up out here and like just experience it, so everyone should know about it.
No, I totally agree. You know, I've been able to visit England a couple times, but I have yet to go to that part of the country, and it's one of those places where I'm like, every time I have this, you know, desire to travel again, I'm like, I have to go there.
It's well worth it.
You know, anytime I see it like on film or TV, I'm like, yeah, I have to visit. Another thing that I was seeing is, you know, your love for like adventure stories. Where did that start? Was that something also that started when you were younger, you know, wanting to be like out, you know, in nature and going in the woods and things like that? Or was it, you know, from stories that you had read as well?
A mixture. So we definitely spent a lot of like time outside. So my dad was really into like nature and the outdoors, and we used to go like every day outside. And me and my friends, so we had a couple of friends, and we used to play like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter and stuff. So we used to like all pick a character and march around the woods pretending we were like Frodo or Sam or whoever was the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a lot of like adventure playing outside. But also stories. So my grandma would make up stories and like tell them to us. And we grew up with like the Famous Five. I don't know if you'll know them. The books by Enid Blyton. So Famous Five, Secret Seven, all like, and all those stories are all about young kids that are in like gangs that go on adventures and do stuff together.
Right.
So we definitely tried to replicate that a little bit when we were growing up.
Awesome. You know, I love that you mentioned, you know, like pretending you were, you know, in Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, because my cousins and I, we did the same thing when we were younger. I'll never forget, at my grandparents' house, we had this swing set with a slide, and every time we wanted to reenact the scene of Gandalf holding onto the cliff in Fellowship of the Ring before the Balrog gets him by the ankles, and we reenacted that so many times. So I totally get what you're saying. It's so much fun.
So, It's so fun. Like, I remember my granddad one day, he said, "Oh, can we just park the car?" Like, it was an old Ford. And he was like, "We're just going to park it on the drive for a little bit." So me and my sisters ran inside and we were like, got the keys, and we were like, "It's the flying car from Harry Potter." So we're just like climbing all over this car and like pretending to drive it and like
Oh
doing
my
loads of
God.
crazy stuff.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun. That's something I wish I could still do now, nearing 30. I'm like, I wish I could do that, but maybe not in public where too many people can see. Now I wanted to get into more on, your influences in terms of your writing. Were there any specific authors or, different things that inspired you, when it comes to actually writing out a story?
Yeah, so Stephen King, massively.
Okay.
I love Stephen King. Like, I've been reading, I don't know, so when we were at, and I don't know if this is going to reflect good on my parents, so I'll tell you anyway.
Yeah.
So when we were small, me and my sisters found a collection of cassette tapes, and it was The Gunslinger by Stephen King. And we were only like maybe 7, 8, 9, whatever. But every night we used to listen to these tapes, these Stephen King tapes, and they were definitely well like above what we probably should have been listening to.
Yeah.
But it definitely, the way that he told this tall stories, and like his kind of approach to like not really having any rules. So it's like the story and putting the story on the page is the most important thing. And it doesn't matter if your punctuation isn't quite right, or if you have to make up a word to kind of
Right.
get what you mean. Like, definitely stuff like that, like being brave
Yeah.
when you're writing is something that I definitely take from him, I think.
What's your favorite Stephen King book? Or the one that at least maybe has influenced you the most?
Oh, so I love the Dark Tower series, and I think like, but I think you have to have that as like a full series to really appreciate what it is. But in terms of books, I loved The Institute, which is one of his more recent ones. Like, that I thought was really good. And the one about JFK, it's the day, I can't, it's like
Yeah.
11
Yeah,
29
11,
something.
22, 63, I think. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
that one was absolutely amazing. I read that and I was like, whoa, he's
Yeah.
crazy.
He is such a great author. I wish I had more of his books. But yeah, anytime I've read his book, it's one of those where you immediately get really hooked on it and you're like, I'll finish this today. Like I'll clear my schedule, I'll finish it right now.
That's it.
You
Oh
know,
man.
now in terms of your debut novel and the duology you've found, can you talk a bit about that story, how that story came about, and what that writing process was like?
Yeah, so the story, I'd not written anything like it before. Like, I made it up new to with the intention to publish it, because like I'd been writing loads of little bits all over, just practicing and like just writing whatever I fancied writing at the time, like, but no real structure. So a lot of the stories that I'd been practicing with, there was no beginning and no end. I'd just like jump in wherever I felt like I wanted to start, and then just also jump out. So they were no like they weren't very coherent. And then I thought, I'm getting to like 20, 26 now, and if I really want to have a go at publishing, I've got to like actually try. I've got to actually try and make something. So when I was kind of trying to think of the idea, I've always loved Arthurian legend and like Merlin and stuff like that. I think the fact that there's so much of it and no one can agree on anything is really beautiful. And I also, when I'd kind of made the decision that I was going to self-publish, and I knew that I would have had a lot, I had a lot to learn business-wise and stuff. So I wanted to choose something that I knew, if I needed a little bit of help world building wise, that I could just be like, okay, what Arthurian legend could I be influenced by here, or what could I draw upon here? So kind of making sure that I had enough of my own story, but also stuff that other like people might be able to relate to or already have knowledge about as
Do
well.
you think that what you said about there not being, total agreement on how this story actually went, do you feel like that gave you a lot of freedom to kind of do what you wanted?
And it's great because like there's bits where you can just be like, oh, even if the stories don't match up, but I want a little bit from this retelling, I can take a little bit of that, and then I can take a little bit from somewhere else.
Yeah.
So it's kind of good that they don't match up, because you can do your own thing completely then, and
Yeah,
it's like
no, that's so true because, there are a lot of retellings and not only in books but in TV shows and movies where you're just like I like to look at the live action remakes as kind of that, where you're like, okay, it's an animated movie, now you're just turning it into live action, same beats and whatever. So I really like with your story how you're, injecting what you want in there while still, kind of being faithful to stuff that's come before it. Now, what were some challenges? While the freedom is really great, were there some challenges of maybe not having clear and set guidelines of maybe how you wanted this to go or how it should go?
Yeah, kind of. Sorry, if you just hear a little bit of yipping, my dog is asleep and
Oh, no worries.
he's just dreaming, so
No
he's
worries.
just like making noise. But yeah, I don't know, there is challenges in terms of what people expect, I think, from an Arthurian story, and that I've been asked a couple of times, like, oh, how did you make sure you were true to the sword, correct swords that they use, and how did you make sure you're true to this? And I was like, I did not do that. Like, I just did it. I didn't think about like the specifics of what armor they were wearing and whether that had to be accurate. So I know some people do that, and that is like, that's great. It just wasn't one of my priorities. So it's definitely like when you're asked to speak, or if I'm asked to speak like to broader Arthurian legend, it's like I don't actually know. I only know the bits that I know for what I needed to know, and like the wider stories. So I don't know like the 100 different versions of whatever bit of Arthurian legend I've used. I just know the little bits. So quite challenging when you like people think that you should know a lot more about the legend than you actually do.
It's that whole thing of, some people expect you to be an expert on it when you're like, I just like the story, I like the vibe of it, and I want to write it. Which makes total sense. I feel like that's one of the things when speaking to authors, especially those that write, on topics and in genres where there is a lot of that research that is a part of it. And when I'm reading some of it, I'm like, the amount of research that probably went into this to get every little thing right, I don't know how I could have done it. And I think I would just like create my own rules as I go along. Like, this isn't totally accurate, it is what it is. But with this story, with that in the back of your mind of knowing how popular these legends are, did that ever creep into your mind of, I hope that at least some things that maybe are big story beats or things that are very recognizable and noticeable, that I get those right? Or was it just however I pictured in my mind, that's how I'm going to write it?
Yeah, definitely. And I do hope that I get them right. Like, so I'm on with writing the third book now, and there's stuff in there. Like, so as the series goes on, it's getting more and more into like the Arthurian legend side of stuff. And it's like, I do want to be true to a lot of things, like true to a lot of the characters and some of the storylines. But I also want to put twists in, offer stuff to like work for me as well, like the story that I want to tell. So I think there are certain things that you have to be like true to. I think there are certain things like the idea of Mordred overthrowing Arthur and like that being the end of Camelot. I think you can't really deviate from an event like that. Like that happened, and that is like the things that everybody agrees on. You kind of have to, you either have to talk about them and prove them to be wrong in your story for whatever reason, or you have to accept them as true. But you can't like you couldn't just change Mordred for somebody else and like hope nobody noticed. You know what I mean?
There are some things you had to keep, as those pivotal moments in the story. That makes total sense. Now, when you went from found to betrayed, what was that experience like? When you're writing, the second book, and now, as you said, you're working on the third one. How have these experiences kind of changed as you've gone through the story?
They've definitely gotten easier to write, because I think the first one, and I think anyone who's written a book for the first time will find that actually understanding the pacing of a story and like the order that events need to be in, like it took me so long, and I had a really good beta reader who helped a lot. But to get like the events in the correct order that actually made sense, or that made like the story have a good flow. It was so difficult to learn how to do that. But I think once you've kind of done it once, you kind of go, oh, okay, I get it. I see what I have to do. So then the second one, it was like much easier to get into that flow and to like understand where to like leave cliffhangers or where to like extend chapters and stuff like that. So
before you started writing these stories, did you expect that to be the most difficult part, or did that kind of throw you off a little bit?
Yeah, it did throw me off. Like, I didn't, I knew it was going to be quite difficult, but I didn't think it was going to be as difficult as it was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought, okay, like, I've read so many books. I've read enough books to know what I'm doing. But it's like, it's not exactly the same. Like, you have to do a lot of filler, like a lot of filler. And like, there's a lot of people, like, you've got to move people from location to location that is like, and you have to do it in a way that's interesting. Like, I was sat writing and I was written 1,000 words and I was like, oh, my characters have moved from like the sitting room to the kitchen and it's taken me like 3 hours to write that.
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of stuff like that, that you're like, oh, I thought it was going to be a lot more action. But,
you know,
they have to also be believable.
Yeah. And I love that you brought that up, because I think both as readers and TV and movie watchers, we always go to that word of filler when we're like, nothing's happening. We want the story to start moving. But then when you go to write something, you realize how important that filler is to just make it all flow in such a way that not only makes sense, but isn't so jarring when you're going from one big thing happening to the next. So I really like that you brought that up, because that's something that, you know, I've been guilty of. You know, when watching a TV show, you're like, you have 10 episodes. Why is episode 3? Nothing's happening. And then you're like, it's there for a reason. You know, you have to work towards it. Another thing that I saw this on your TikTok, when you received the hardcover copy for Found, what was that feeling like when you work on something for so long that then you can actually hold it in your hand and you know that it's like, it's real, you know, it is now existing in the world?
It was so good. It was so good, because it looked a lot better. It looked so much better than I thought. Like, I thought it would look good, but the printing was so good that I was just, I don't know. I was like overwhelmed. I was so happy with it. I don't know. You just feel like, oh, you've worked so hard, and it's like a long slog to get from the start to the finish.
Yeah.
And it's also nice when you like, it's all your work. Like, that you've had a hand in every single part of it. And like, I don't know, it's just something really cool that you can be proud of and actually,
Yeah, no, I can't imagine what that feeling is like. And then not only that feeling, but then once people are actively reading it and leaving the reviews and, you know, just being super kind, because I know everybody gets that one person or whatever that just, you know, leaves a review for whatever reason that isn't necessarily the best. But how was it dealing with that part of it when you're like, okay, I no longer own this story, but now it is out there. Everybody can read it. Did you have to, like, you know, compartmentalize the critical reaction from, you know, maybe what you had thought was going to happen in your mind? Or is that something that you just have to say, it's out there and whatever happens, happens?
Yeah, I kind of just took that attitude towards it and just said, you know, but also I was really sure that it was a really good book.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that helped. Like, I was not nervous, because I was like, I've worked really hard. I've spent a long time getting it ready, getting it right. I'm personally really happy with it, and have done everything that I feel like I can do at this point. Like, because I think every time you write a new book or you have a new go, like, you learn such a new skill or something more that makes your work better. So it's like, in the first book and in the second one, so in the first one, I had to learn that I had so many repeated words that I didn't even know that I was repeating, that the word that came, like, I must have written it a million times, right?
Yeah.
I just have no idea. And then, so even in the edit, you can't catch all the that's. You just can't. But in the second book, it's like, I know that, so I'm looking for that straight off the bat. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for, like, how I can improve and how I can, like, make my life easier. So Like the process is so much more streamlined, but with that first one, you kind of have to just give yourself some grace, and you have to like accept that if you've done it all, because I did have a proofreader, but they did not have to do a lot of work, so it was like I knew that I'd chosen to do the edit, and I'd chosen to do the end proof and the formatting and everything else, and that there would be mistakes in it, and that's okay, and just accepting that it doesn't like. It's your first go with someone who's never done it before. It doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be good enough. And because I was sure that it was good enough, I didn't really feel like, even with like more negative criticism, I just thought, well, it's obviously just not their thing. Like, rather than it being a reflection on me, I just was like, well, it's just not what they like.
Now, how important do you think it is for authors to, maybe they want their story to be perfect. Like, there is absolutely no blemish in this writing. This is, the most perfect thing that I've ever written. How important do you think it is for authors to not strive for that all the time, but if it's something that they're happy with, and if it's just good, but you love the story and you think it's good enough to go out there, should there ever be a case where authors keep something in when it's not that perfect thing?
No, I don't think, 'cause like no book is going to be ever perfect. Like even like every traditionally published author that you could think of, I reckon they'll read through one of their books and go, oh, I wish I'd have done that instead. Or, oh, why didn't I think of that? Like there's some stuff when you read people like Sarah J. Maas, when kind of characters come in right at the end of the series and you're thinking, maybe we should have heard about them a little bit earlier on if they were important. So it's like you see even people like that who are super successful, like just shoehorning little ideas in because they didn't think about it before. So everyone, and some people will read a first time author's book and that'll be their favorite book for the rest of their life. So it doesn't need to be perfect. As long as it's readable and like as long as you're happy with it, I don't think there is a problem with like putting it out there.
And I think that's another thing that a lot of people, at least on Book Talk, that I've seen talk about it, is a lot of readers read because they want to have a good time. It doesn't have to be this scholarly work that is going to win every award out there, but and I'm very much the same way, where I want to read a book where I'm enjoying it, I'm having a good time, whether it's, a fantasy, a romance, a horror novel. Like, I want it to be an enjoyable experience. So in that same breath, what has been the most enjoyable part about writing these books so far?
I don't know. There's been quite a lot of in like the community is really enjoyable. Like I didn't know. I was kind of nervous to get on Book Talk and stuff. But it was a much. I don't know. It was much more fun than I thought it was going to be. Like that process, but also just like having the books, having the story. Like in a so it, when I write the books or do the series, I know what's going to happen. Like I don't plot. Like I'm not a massive plotter, but I do know what's going to happen, but it's still like it's not really happened until it's in a book form. So it's like once until the story's finished, it's like I don't also really know exactly how it's going to look and exactly what it's going to be like. So I want to know as much as anyone else who wants to read it what the finished story is going to be. So that's something that's super enjoyable, like getting to see it at the end. Good.
Have you surprised yourself at all with, as you're writing, where the story may take a turn that you weren't expecting maybe a week or two ago?
So many times. So many times it's happened in Betrayed. So I'd set up, I wrote when I was writing it, and then I took a bit of a break and came back to it, and I'd written to set up one of the characters, the villain, and I'd had it in my head that that person was going to be the villain and it was all going to come out and they were actually going to be responsible for everything. And I'd written the scene where Mill says, right, take me to him, find him, where is he? And then I'd written someone shouting stop, and I'd intended for that to be Owen, the villain who I'd set up the whole time. And then when I came back to it, I came back at that point, and my fingers wrote a completely different name. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I was like, no. And I was like, oh, okay. Oh, wait, yeah, that works. And then like that changed like the whole nature of the story. But it happens a couple of times where something just kind of falls into place that you weren't expecting, but you go, oh, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense that that would happen. Like it's the only thing that would happen.
Yeah, I gotta imagine that's gotta be one of the more like rewarding things when you're writing, where something like you're just in that zone, and maybe subconsciously you're thinking that this is what you want to write, but it's not really going to the front of your brain and it just comes out. That's gotta be so amazing. Now, in the editing process, have there been decisions that you've had to make thus far that, like, in your heart, you didn't want to, but you felt like for the story, it made sense?
And like cutting out some stuff, like moving. So with the originally in Found, like Mel's mum dies. I had originally intended for her not to die, for her to like stay on, but then it got too like trying to keep her as a character that was like there but couldn't really be involved in anything. It was like, I really don't want to do this, but we're gonna have to do it. So yeah, stuff like that. But a lot of it in the edit is like if I've written paragraphs or sentences that I feel are important or that I like, but then when you read through and you go, I've kind of said this already, and like it's more important for me to like write it than it was is for the story. Like stuff like that's hard to cut, but you just have to be brutal.
Yeah, that's got to be one of the tougher parts about writing a book is, you finish it and then you go back through that editing process, and I'm sure the majority of authors would love to leave everything in, but it's one of those things where, does it need to be in there? Does it not? And you have to wrestle with that. And it's really unfortunate because I spoke with an author a few weeks ago, where she had been living with this story for 2.5 years, grown really attached to the characters. And then those decisions, it's like you're doing things to a family member where you're like, I don't want to have to cut you out or maybe change your story a little bit, but I have to. And it becomes like such a grueling thing.
Yeah, my mum was like, at the beginning of Betrayed, one of the knights dies, and she was like, I hope you're happy with yourself. And I was like, what? She was like, he had a family to raise. And I was like, mom, I'm
Oh my
sorry.
goodness. That is so funny. We're always victims as readers. We're always victims of those decisions where we're like, no, why did you have to do that? And then, we're stewing on that for, a year or two before the next book comes out to see what happens. Now, for aspiring authors, as we're nearing the end of the episode here, for aspiring authors that might be listening and they're going through writing their first book or getting ready to publish their first novel, what is some advice you'd have for them, words of encouragement, through this process and once that book is out?
So my first bit of advice is a bit contradictory, and it is don't only take advice that works for you. Like you see so much in so many people saying, oh, I tried this and it didn't work, or this does work, or you can only do this or only do that. But whatever they only can do, it didn't work for the person next to them and they did something entirely different. So if you hear a bit of advice and that resonates with you and you go, oh yeah, okay, I could try that, then that's the advice you should take. But there's like, I don't know, you should just make sure that you are feeling confident and that you are confident that the book is good. Like if you know in your heart that the book you've written is good and you like it, then it doesn't really matter what anyone else thinks of it. Like you should just publish it, because if you like it, there will be like millions of other people out there in the world that also like it. You just have to find where they are. So that'd be my first bit. And then something that I say to students, I work at a uni, so sometimes I have to give them advice. But I would say make a publishing plan based on what, like your own research and what works for you, and then stick to it. Don't cheat, like go through one cycle of whatever plan you've made and see it through, and then evaluate it at the end. Like nobody really knows what they're doing, so there is no reason that you would not get it right the first time. Like there is nothing to say that you would not do what you wanted to do or that you'd make good decisions. So just have a go and see how it goes, and then evaluate once you've seen it through. That's probably my key one.
Awesome. Well, Gabby, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. It was such a great conversation. I haven't spoken about the reenacting the Lord of the Rings in the backyard in years, so that was great. you know, before I let you go, if you could tell people where they can find the books, where they can find you online, and how they can support you.
Yes, so TikTok is my main place where I post my updates online. So I'm just author Gab Skeldon on there. And then you can find my books on Amazon and in my Etsy store if you want like more signed or artwork and bookmarks and stuff that go with them. But they're the main places to find me.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, hope you enjoyed the conversation. Definitely go out and get Found and Betrayed. Leave Gabby some awesome reviews as well. And stick around for the next episode next week, and I'll talk to you all very soon.